Thank you, Dimitri. And I'd also like to thank the organizers, that's Tom and Matthias, and the local organizers of this week. I organized a workshop in Edinburgh a few years ago, and I know how much work it is, so thank you to everyone. This is some work that I've been doing with my student, Andrew Ng, who is with me at University of Oxford and is shortly to go to Goldman Sachs. I think it's almost finished, but it's not quite finished. Andrew, I think, disagrees with me and thinks it's finished, but that's partly because Goldman Sachs are offering him money to start at the end of January. And this highlights the sort of moral hazard that Hans was talking about in applying mathematics to finance. So we think we've got some results here. We certainly have some numerical results, but whether that constitutes a complete formulation of the problem and a solution is another matter. Okay. I'm going to talk about first this basic model, tell you the motivation for this thing, and show you that essentially it reduces to a problem of optimal stopping when you have a governing reward process that's influenced by a one-dimensional time inhomogeneous diffusion. Okay. So we'll map the problem to some optimal stopping problem and look at the value function associated with that and try and get the results by establishing certain properties of this. As you'll see, again, you can map it to an American option problem where you don't have constant parameters, but you have, if you like, stochastic dividends that are level dependent, dependent on the price and also dependent on time. And although this problem of American options has been studied a great deal over 20, 30 years and more, when you try and look in the literature and look for how much we can say when you don't have constant parameters, it's much more limited. So again, we think we have some answers on this, but it's work in progress, and we hope in the next few weeks to get the final answers. So I'll use a traditional approach to this, though, and formulate a free boundary problem. Once I've got some properties of the value function, establish the smooth fit condition, which you have to do on a case-by-case basis, and from that, an integral equation for the boundary, which comes from an early exercise decomposition. And finally, some numerical results. Okay. I was thinking about this for many years, partly because I used to work in an economics department, and I had colleagues who were doing empirical research on whether executives exercised their options and what were the subsequent returns of the stocks after they exercised. And they were trying to look for patterns that were leading to early exercise, because empirically, people see that these things are exercised. You know, they're American options, but they're almost always exercised before maturity. And usually, in the empirical literature, you'll see that this is attributed to things like contractual features of the ESO, like job termination, vesting, that sort of thing, resetting, and to the fact that the executive can't hedge, so they're risk averse, and they want to eliminate that risk, and so they exercise early. If you look for evidence empirically that the insiders, so someone who's working for the company and knows what's going to happen to the stock, exercises early, you find that on the whole, they reject this. They say, we don't find evidence that there's a bad return after exercise, except this lovely phrase in a paper by Jennifer Carpenter and Barbara Remmers, which says, except after exercise by top managers at small firms. In other words, exactly the ones who do have inside information. So this is what made me think that maybe inside information can play a role in this. And that's the motivation for this work. Okay. If you go to the math finance literature and try and look at this sort of thing, you'll see that people have found models which give early exercise. So there are plenty of models on ESOs by Vicky Henderson and a paper with Matthias Grisselli that looks at a perpetual American option. And they argue that the fact that it's perpetual doesn't change the conclusions too much. And a very comprehensive formulation by Ronnie Sirkar and Tim Leung. And it was when I saw Tim Leung speaking at the Oxford-Princeton workshop a couple of years ago that I came back to this and sort of whispered to my student and said, let's see if we can get this from another angle with inside information. So this is how this came. And you don't just get early exercise. If you allow for a number of options and partial exercise, you also get partial exercise of these things. And there's a paper by Chris Rogers and Jose Frankman that shows this kind of thing. So they get all this kind of thing from the usual motivations like risk aversion and other kinds of things. And it's so common that if you look at an attempt to value these things analytically, then Jakša Svetanić has a paper where he just takes, he gets some nice formulae for the ESO value, but basically he takes early exercises as given, right? And just says, right, I'm going to take that as given and put that in endogenously. Right. He says it will happen, and there is some boundary. And then, given that, he then tries to find a formula. So he doesn't try and get that by saying there's an optimal stopping problem involved. Okay. So I'm going to do something different. I want to just see if inside information will do this. So I'm going to completely assume away all such things like risk aversion, this executive cannot trade the stock, or any other outside stocks. You could change that maybe if you make extensions to this. And therefore, it's just going to maximize the expected discounted payoff of the option. That's all this executive is going to do. And the reason I'm doing that is partly to get a nice simple formulation and partly just to focus on the role of inside information. That's what I'm going to do. Precisely because of the no trading. So I'll come to that. In other words, the guy's not trading, so he's just maximizing expected utility. Utility will be linear. That's it. That's all I'm going to do. Okay. So, I'll just say a few words about a huge literature on incorporating inside information. I won't make big comments on these. I just want to show you how much has been done and the approach that I'm going to use. So the first paper that I know which started to do this in math finance was about 1996, I think, by Igor Pikovsky and Yanis Karatsas. And they used classical enlargement and filtration results to say, what if someone has knowledge of a random variable at time zero? So this random variable could be connected to the final value of a stock. And that's the sort of thing that I will do. And this kind of enlargement and filtration stuff has been extended by Martin Schweitzer, Peter Imkeller, and many others, using either an initial enlargement and filtration, so knowledge of a random variable at time zero, or maybe a progressive enlargement, so knowledge of some random time that is not a stopping time for uninformed agents. People like Arturo Kohatsu-Higa have done things with a dynamic flow of information. Fabrice Baudouin has used models where there's information on the law of some random variable. And people like Caroline Hiller has compared the kind of strategies you get depending on these types of inside information. So that's all papers where there's just an initial enlargement and people trade based on that. There's also a large literature, some of which we saw yesterday by Luciano Campi, where there's an insider and you look for equilibrium models based upon trading and not trying to reveal your information by virtue of your trades. So, here the insider can influence the market. And again, Agnes Sulem and Arturo Kratzuhiga have a model which does this. And then there's equilibrium models by people like Abin Danilova, Luciano Campi. And mathematically, there's a whole class of papers using things like forward integral approaches by Bernd Oxendahl and his collaborators. And finally, I'll mention a recent paper I did with Andrew and Albina Danilova, where we looked at utility maximization with an initial enlargement of filtration, but then we also added the idea that knowing the final stock value is not the same as knowing the final Brownian motion value, because all agents are uncertain about the drift. So you combine some sort of filtering with additional information and look to see how the additional information influences both the trading strategy but also the estimation of the parameter that is uncertain. And so that's something I was thinking about speaking about here, but I thought I'd do something new even though it's incomplete. Okay. So I'm going to have some probability space with a right continuous filtration, so satisfying all the usual conditions. And there'll be a log stock price X on this thing, so the stock price is an exponential of that. And to begin with, this will be a, there's a geometric Brownian motion for the stock. So there's some drift for the log stock, gamma. There's an interest rate, which is not going to be zero usually. Particularly if I'm doing an American option, the interest rate can have an effect because you're discounting at some random time. And there's two sorts of agents. The main agent that I will consider will be this insider. So think of this insider as a top manager and knows something about how well or how badly he's done his job. And so he has some additional information on the future stock price. Basically through knowledge at time zero of some F measurable random variable where F is the overriding sigma algebra. And the canonical example to think of is when there's some terminal time T, and I could change this, this will coincide with the maturity of the American core that this person is going to be offered, but they have some noisy information on this terminal log stock price. And therefore there's some parameter, not zero, but can be one if you have perfect information, which distorts this information by some noise. So epsilon here will be some Gaussian random variable standard, independent of everything else in the market, like the Brownian motion driving the stock. And that's the example to keep in mind, although I will try and see what happens to this when you enlarge filtration by a random variable that's generally F measurable. Okay. So that's how this insider has information. And as I said, there's restrictions on this insider trading S. Normally, most of the models you see have outside trading, and that induces hedging and therefore early exercise. I don't want to do that. I just want to focus on the role of inside information. And I'll distinguish this insider from some other employee who wouldn't have extra information, so wouldn't have knowledge of this random variable L, so their filtration will be just F, the Brownian filtration governing this dynamics. Okay. Okay. As far as the top manager is concerned, what we'll do is simply enlarge his filtration so by the sigma algebra generated by the random variable L, the noisy knowledge of the terminal stock price. So there will be a whole sequence of sigma algebra filtration formed by simply enlarging the Brownian filtration in the classical manner. Okay. And then, under suitable conditions on L, the dynamics with respect to the enlarged filtration of the log stock price force a change of drift. And this change of drift in general will depend on the random variable L, of course, and on the underlying state variable X. And you will get a new Brownian motion, which is a Brownian motion with respect to the enlarged filtration, so I'll index it with L. Okay. So that's the usual thing you get. And again, in the canonical example, let's just give you the formulae that you should think of if you want to do this in a specific case. So here's the example that we're going to show numerical results for in the end. So there's this random variable that we know. That should be a plus there, of course. And I should mention that I'm choosing this terminal time to be the time at which you have information, well, you know the information at time zero, but I'm saying that you know information at the about the random variable, about the stock price at the final time. One could change that and maybe consider having information before maturity, maybe having a perpetual option and having information at some random time, and maybe you'll get more analytical tractability with that, but it's not clear how things will work then, because then you'll have one process before the information and then another process once that information has passed. Okay, so there's extensions to this that one could think of. So, if you do take this noisy terminal stock price information, though, as your thing, then you get some sort of, it's like a bridge process, but it's distorted by this parameter A, which modulates the noise. So you get some sort of bridge-type process, as we saw in Luciano's talk yesterday, for this type of thing. If you set A equal to 1, so there's no noise, and you have exact knowledge of this final stock price, then this becomes a Brownian bridge which is pinned at the final time to the exact level L, which will be the exact value of the stock price. Okay? So that's, again, the example to keep in mind. And inside here there's some constant, which depends on some modulated time. This modulated time is indeed modulated by the volatility, but mainly by this parameter A that controls the noise level, and depends, as we said earlier, on the random variable L. So that's just, and the way you get that is just by using either some form of filtering theory or classical enlargement of filtration results. And I think Luciano did the work for me yesterday, who showed that there is, with respect to the enlarged filtration, the original Brownian motion has a semi-martingale decomposition, which gives a Brownian motion in the enlarged filtration plus a drift. And this drift is given by the logarithmic derivative of some conditional density function satisfying some kind of integrability condition for this stuff to work. And this is the conditional density of the information you have, the random variable L, given the smaller sigma algebra, the Brownian sigma algebra. Okay. And then this process that appears in here, this integral given in this way, is called the information drift. Okay. So I'll use that language. And if you take that stuff and simply plug in the example of the random variable that I've been using, then you'll get some Gaussian distribution for the random variable L given the Brownian information up to some time t. So there'll be some Gaussian distribution with this terminal time appearing, and so you get this information drift explicitly in terms of the initial value of the stock, and you just use the solution for the log stock price to rewrite this in such a way that you get the dynamics that I wrote down before.
Okay.
So you get some sort of bridge dynamics. Okay. So given those dynamics, I want to consider an optimal stopping problem for this agent. So I'll just use some notation to denote two sets of stopping times. Calligraphic capital T is just a set of stopping times with respect to the original filtration F, and TL will be the set of stopping times with respect to the enlarged filtration, and I will just have some notation for subsets of those when I have a stopping time between sometimes small t and sometimes large t, both with respect to the small filtration and the larger filtration. Okay? And I will drop these subscripts for time when I'm looking about at the entire interval. Okay? So these are the sets of stopping times that I want to consider in this optimal stopping problem. Okay. So now to set up the kind of reward that you're going to get. So you have an American call with strike K. This will give the executive the stock, but let's just say that he has to sell it immediately, so it's cash settled. Again, just assume away all trading opportunities. Rather, unlike most of the talks here, I don't think there's any trading going on here. It's just stopping, okay? So the insider is going to look for some stopping time, tau star, within the set of stopping times that are with respect to the enlarged filtration that maximize some expected reward. And this is the discounted payoff of the option. No. L is a constant here. Okay, so I'm looking. So this guy knows L, yeah? So if you mean that sense, yes, I do. If I understand your language, yeah, I think I understand what you mean. Yes, because it's in this larger set of stopping times. So yes. Okay. So this person knows this, and for them, that random variable L is a constant. I hope that's an answer to. Okay. So there'll be some integrability on this reward process, and therefore. Although I won't be concerned with this valuation so much, I'll be concerned with what stopping time achieves this maximal expected reward. If you consider an agent who doesn't have this information, they'll have the same objective to maximize this expected reward, but over a set of stopping times, which are stopping times of the smaller filtration. Okay. And I'll just give that an index 0 just to distinguish it from that. But I won't be considering this problem really, just by this problem you can get by mapping it to a standard American call, as I'll say in a moment, simply because you have constant coefficients in that model. This non-executive is also an employee, yeah? So again, they're not trading or anything else. So if they were trading the stock, then yes, it would be the risk-neutral measure. What I'm doing is really saying they're not trading. So all they're doing is maximizing expected payoff under physical measure. That's not, obviously, if you put trading in and hedging and other things, then you will have some different measure, of course. The only distinction I'm making between the regular agent and them is the existence of knowledge of L. That's the only difference. But in both cases, they cannot trade. So I'm looking at a pure optimal stopping problem. Okay. To say something about that, if you look at this benchmark case where there's no inside information and consider a typical example where you have a growth rate bigger than R, okay? Then the reward process is a submartingale under the small filtration. So in that case, the agent's value for the American coincides with the European value. When I say European value, I don't mean European sort of Black Scholes value. I just mean the expected payoff under the physical measure of the terminal value of the reward. Okay? In other words, given their objective and they cannot trade, and given that this is a submartingale, they will exercise only at the final time by virtue of this being a submartingale and optional sampling. Okay? So this is, imagine going back before the days when you could trade. Okay? If you want to think about this another way, then you can map this to some standard American problem with constant coefficients by simply writing mu is r minus delta for some delta. Then mu being bigger than r means that there's some dividend rate, if you like, that's negative, and when you have a negative dividend rate, you wouldn't exercise. Obviously, if you had mu less than r, so a bad stock, this person would exercise early. Right? But you can just map that one-to-one to a standard American option because you have constant coefficients. So the issue here is not whether you have a risk-neutral measure or not. You don't simply because you're not trading, so you're just maximizing expected payoff. The issue is the information. That's the point here. Ah, but that's for other reasons, like risk aversion or other contractual features. In other words, if there was no risk aversion, if you just have this problem, and again, I'm filtering away everything else. So if you just had this problem, and you're maximizing expected value at a stopping time of a submartingale, you'll wait forever. Okay? So absolutely right. You know. So I'm just taking away all other things that might cause early exercise. Right? Okay. So, just to finish the notation, and then we'll show you some properties of the value function. I will consider the essential supremum of the discounted payoff at starting at any time small t. So I maximize over stopping times in the interval, and I can write this value at time t of the so value in inverted commas as e to the rt times the essential supremum of the maximal expected reward. Once again, given the sigma algebra at time t that comes from observing the Brownian motion or the stock up to time t and also having the final value. So I'm looking at this process u, this essential supremum of this expected reward. And this is basically the discounted value of the ESO. Okay. Alright, so this thing will be, there'll be a right continuous version of this, the Schnell envelope, which will be the smallest supermartingale with respect to the enlarged sigma algebra that dominates the reward and at the final time equals the reward. And as I said, it is this essential supremum, and its expected value is the sup over expected value of the reward at some time tau, the time tau t star, which is the first time in the stopping interval at which the Schnell envelope hits the expected reward. So this is standard optimal stopping, okay? So this is now it's a case of looking at this process for Markovian dynamics and finding this optimal stopping time, and it's the optimal stopping time, as we said, if you have the entire interval between 0 and t, then it's the it's optimal if the Schnell envelope is equal to the reward process, and this thing being some, and the stop supermartingale is a martingale, again with respect to this enlarged filtration. And so you have some due decomposition of this, some uniformly integrable martingale, and some increasing or non-decreasing process, which is right continuous, predictable, but if I have continuous dynamics, then it will be continuous and adapted. Okay? And this process does not increase except, so it only increases when the Schnell envelope hits the reward, of course. Okay? And that's the thing. So, all that machinery, now we look at the value function, try and get some of its properties. So there's two ways to go here. One is I'm going to use a traditional PDE approach to this and try and establish properties of some value function. The other thing is to say, well, let me continue the probabilistic analysis and derive everything that I'm going to derive here from another point of view, a probabilistic approach, and I'll say something about that in the next few minutes. So I'll just complete the properties of this value function, and then we'll look at other ways of doing this. So I look at some value function given some starting state for the log stop price, and it's the maximum over stopping times of the of some function of time and state, which is the reward function that we gave before, and there's these Markovian dynamics. Okay. This function has various properties. It's continuous, and if evaluated at current time and at current state, at for any time, it's the Schnell envelope of the reward process. And this goes back to papers all, 81 and 92 by Elkhoury and some others, who did a probabilistic formulation of this and showed that this function, the Radwitz as they call it, is the Schnell envelope of the reward process. So it's continuous. I have that. I don't have to do anything about that. I can always link it to the actual value of the ESO simply by making a transformation to back to the stock price, the exponential of the log stock price, and just changing variables. So that's just so this function F or the function V, they're identical at modulo discounting. Okay. All right. Now here comes the bits where these are not conjectures. They're things which we think we've managed to prove, even in the case where you have time inhomogeneous diffusion. But I think there's one or two things I would still like to check here. So, given some starting state, x, I have some stopping time, which will depend on the time and also, in general, on the starting state. And it'll be the first time at which this value function hits the reward. Or I can express it in terms of the stock price itself rather than log stock price, so it's the first time that the value function of the ESO hits the payoff, okay? And at all the other times, because of the Super-Martingale condition, I will have domination of this value function by this thing. So this makes sense. There's no problem. The next step, this is an open set, this continuation region, because the function is continuous, so that's okay. So I'm still in good shape here, even though I've moved to a time inhomogeneous diffusion. Now comes the thing where there's some work to be done, I think. And I think we have all this, but that there is some function that is decreasing. I don't need it to be smooth, I think. I'd like to show that it's concave, but I'll say some more about that. So this is the early exercise boundary, such that, this is a call, the option will be exercised the first time this hits this. So the first thing is to say, can we, with a time inhomogeneous diffusion, get this sort of result? Okay. That there's some function that is decreasing, and given early excise, there will be some function. If there's no early excise, this thing is off to infinity all the time. All right? It will always dominate the strike, of course. And therefore, the continuation region is all the points where the stop price is strictly less than that. Okay. So, how would I get some kind of thing like this? Well, here's where it gets more tricky. Normally, when you try and prove this kind of thing, you look at the map, the value function, and you look at the map t to any time. So you're looking at time moving forward. Now, it doesn't mean that although you're making the maturity smaller, and therefore the function should get less valuable, it's not quite the same as simply saying, let me take a fixed time and make the option longer. Because I have time inhomogeneity, this time decay as a function is not obvious. It's not obvious that you will always get this function to be decreasing in t. And Eric Ekstrom has some examples, some counterexamples, where you don't get this. Okay, really strange. Now, he's saying, obviously, a longer dated option, one which has got more maturity, will be more valuable. But if you fix the maturity and just let the time go forward, and then if you have homogeneous dynamics, you will get decreasing in function. But if you have non-homogeneous stuff, there are counterexamples where you don't get it. And I think this shows something that, when I came to this problem, I thought, well, we should be able to do this. But then I found, as I looked further and further, how much we know about American options is a lot, but nearly always for constant parameters. I'll say something about what you can do when you don't have non-constant parameters. So it's in some sense, it's a really old problem, but in some other sense, it's foundational and fits into this, because we still don't know an awful lot. Okay? So at this point, I have to make this assumption. All right? If you make this assumption, and you can see a proof by Eric Ekstrom that this is true in a stochastic volatility setting, so under the usual things of an equivalent Martingale measure, so not when you have level-dependent volatility and zero interest rate. That's the only way he can prove it. So not if you have a drift in this case, which is level dependent, then you can get this property. And then from that, because of this, if you look at two times, one strictly less than the other, and use the fact that this is decreasing in t, and then look at the subtract the payoff from both of them, use the fact that in the continuation region that you start, this is positive, then you can get that the this thing's decreasing. Okay, so you get some boundary, assuming you have this decay that looks something like what you'd expect for a call option. So that's the first thing, even something like that, when you have time inhomogeneous dynamics. So think of an American option with stochastic dividends, which is what we've got here in a standard risk-neutral setting. Can you show that this is still the kind of boundary you get? I haven't talked about continuity, smoothness, concavity of this thing at all yet, and I would like to, but we'll see how far we can go. Okay. I began thinking about this when I was trying to prove some properties of the value function. Maybe I don't need these properties of the value function. If I go a purely probabilistic approach to this, I'd welcome comments if there's other ways of getting these results. But if I look at the value function, I probably need to make some proofs that this thing is actually concave. Right? Now, standard American option for a put, boundary is convex. But even that, nice proof of that, even that. A paper came out last year by John Chatham and Xin Chen. So how about, what is the final point of this? How about, is it continuous? These kinds of questions I've yet to address. But at least we have some numerical results, as you'll see later, that suggest you do have these properties. Okay. So because I'm taking a PD approach, I need to establish some properties of the value function. For that, I need some properties of the exercise boundary. And I also need some properties. So the properties I will need is that, first, that this value function is increasing in the space variable, and then that it's convex. And we think we have this, although this has been quite hard to prove. So, again, we think we have this, and if we don't, then we think there are some methods in the literature, which I'll comment on, that will give us this. So the value function is increasing in the space variable, and if the drift appearing in the log stock price is non-negative with a second derivative, then this thing will be convex. It's not the drift that's non-negative, it's the second derivative there. Good question. What does it mean in terms of information? Okay, I can only give you... I think I can give you some insight on this in the example where you have noisy stock price information. Then if you can solve the SDE for the log stock price explicitly, because it's a bridge process, and then you find the dependence on this, of the map that I would talk about, the diffeomorphism that you get from initial state to the stochastic flow representing the thing, is linear in this case. Okay, so you have this condition. But a full answer to what you say? Good question. I'm not sure. Yes, it's the it's a good idea to have the dynamics written up there. Okay. Okay. When we started to look at this, Andrew, who's got good intuition, began looking at it using ideas of stochastic flows. And I said, where did you get this from? He goes, it just seemed the right thing to do. He doesn't read, but he has very good intuition. It turns out that he was doing it the right way, I think. Okay, but I'll say what it is. So I'll just consider a starting time t is 0. You can do this for any starting time. Just keep these simple. So look at the, I didn't realize I had it on the next slide. So there is this dynamics for the log stock price, but written in a notation that says I start at x0 is small x, and then I consider the map of the process at any time for starting point x. Okay? So you're doing this for each x, for each time, and for each omega. So of course you may choose versions of this such that this, and which, so that for each t and each omega, you have a diffeomorphism from R-tri. So this map is smooth, satisfies certain time consistency properties, satisfies the fact that it's equal to the initial state if you set the time equal to the initial time, and so on. So now, with this smooth map, we look at properties of this map, and then from properties of this map, try and get properties of the value function. This is, because I'm doing this PDE way of doing it, I need properties of the value function. So I'm going this way. But it would be nice whether, if we can bypass all this, as I said, using some probabilistic techniques, okay? All right. So if I define function B, which is the derivative with respect to the space variable of this drift, and define a process and another stochastic flow, which is the derivative with respect to the initial starting state of this log stock price, then formally differentiating this, but understanding it in the sense of stochastic flows, in the sense of Kronietern or this kind of stuff, you get that this map is increasing. And that this map is also convex if you have the second derivative condition on this drift A. And you get that by solving the ordinary differential equation formally that you get for D when you differentiate. It has initial condition 1, so you get some exponential function, so it's positive, so it's increasing. If you look then at the derivative of the B, which was the derivative of the A that came inside this expression for the derivative of this map with respect to X, then you find that the derivative of this, the second derivative basically of this map, has some expression like this, where what appears here is the derivative of B, so precisely the second derivative here. And therefore this will be non-negative. If this is non-negative, so this map will be convex. Okay? So this is the sort of thing that I'm... So these are the ideas that we're using to get that this thing is that the value function is convex. And the way that we did it is simply a direct way where we look at, if you start at time 0 in some state x, you look at the stopping time as a function of x, which is the first time that the value function with this stochastic flow hits the reward for any omega. Okay, and then you have that this map is decreasing. If you want to see a picture, you start at two different levels, and the sample powers of this diffusion are in one-to-one correspondence with the sample powers of the Brownian motion. So whatever sample path you start from, and you get from some higher value, the one from a lower value will never cross it, because if they did join, Markov property would mean that they would be identical afterwards, so that you can assume they don't cross, and so the expected exercise time, the exercise time will be less. This thing is decreasing, okay? Because if you start from a higher value, you exercise earlier, okay? So this map is decreasing. That map is increasing by the same sort of argument, and so you get that this value function is increasing. And we think we have similar ideas that give us convexity, okay? We think. But this is where I must say I would welcome some comments. But it was good that I began to talk about this here, because I was in a paper that I knew about but didn't check all the fine details of, by Nicola Carrera and Stephen Shreve, where they looked at various robustness properties of Black-Scholes formula and others, so in particular heading results. They did use ideas of stochastic flows to prove convexity in stochastic volatility models for the European case, and then some iterative arguments to move to the American case. So I haven't used these arguments, so I'm just thinking, I think I can get this even another way. That's the thing. I think I can get it, even though I don't have stochastic volatility, I have stochastic drift here. But I think I should be able to get it. And the other thing that I would like to do is maybe use the elegant methods of David Hobson on coupling to do this. So that's the crucial property that I need. Okay. Final things is, this is much more standard, that if I take the extended generator of the log stock price, I can get a standard sort of free boundary problem for the value function. So I won't say much about that. You can do that. The idea is you look into the continuation region. You look for a function that is suitably smooth in the continuation region and satisfies this PDE. And you do verification. You get this, of course, because in general, this operator applied to the value function should be less than or equal to zero because of the Super-Martingale constraint, but the Dubmeier decomposition, the increasing process in that, cannot increase except when you stop, and therefore you get this in the continuation region. So this is all standard. Okay. what you needed the convexity of the value function for was to get the smooth fit condition. Okay. And convexity of F implies convexity of the ESO process. We have that in the stopping region, you have the form for the value function, so you have that at least to the right of the above the boundary. You have derivative of one. Convexity gives you have a gradient below the boundary of less than one, so you have the classical picture that there's some payoff. In other words, what you're trying to do, even though you have these dynamics, is show that there's some function that joins in that way, in the classical way. And so you then have to prove that, so you have derivative less than or equal to 1, you then have to prove that left derivative is bigger than or equal to 1, and you do that by considering starting below the exercise boundary and moving up to it, and taking the limit as some epsilon goes to 0. So now you have that smooth fit condition, then the final steps is to use much more standard techniques to get from this, from the free boundary PD and the smooth fit condition, an early excise decomposition. So the ESO value is some European value plus some early excise decomposition, which involves, this is not the usual thing because I'm working under the physical measure, but it involves the generator of the stock price applied to the payoff given that you're in the continuation region. Okay. One comment, perhaps I can bypass all of this simply by using some methods of Jaka for proving this kind of thing, but again, this is all done for constant coefficients. So this uses properties of the, you relate the Schnell envelope, the difference of the Schnell envelope and the reward process, and there are some interesting connections with that process in local time. So we haven't done this. Maybe you can get this another way, but I went this way. And then from that standard, you get this integral equation for the boundary. And this is what Andrew has been spent some time solving. So you get some, this is the early excise boundary, unknown. You get some European value of an option evaluated at that unknown boundary. And you get some integral term which has an expectation of some sort of payoff inside here. So the way that we solved this numerically was to consider this, go to the final time. So you have some final time here where you have the boundary. Take a starting point for that. We don't know where that starting point will be k or not. We think it will be k, okay? But this is what we did. So you take some starting point for that. Move back one step. Solve this as a European option, so some PDE method, or there might be better ways of solving this, and this is where someone like John Chatham could solve me much better ways of solving this sort of thing. Then look for a fixed point which solves this equation, and having started from some point, get the boundary point one period less, and continue that, and get some picture. Does this thing have a unique solution which converges to the boundary? Again, one final comment on American options. We've been using these things for 30 years, 40 years. Only 3 or 4 years ago did Gorin-Pesquier prove that this thing, in the constant coefficient case, has a unique solution which converges to the boundary. And here's the picture to finish off, and then I'll make some conclusions, which is these are three exercise boundaries for the insider when the drift of the stock before enlargement is bigger than the interest rate. So this is a situation in which the regular guy would not exercise, but you get three exercise boundaries for different levels of noise. So the green one has larger value of A, so this one is more exact value of the stock price. As you have stronger information on the final stock price, you're more confident about exercising early. And this is what these three curves show. So we would like to make all this rigorous by finishing off some things in the properties of the value function, and I'll finish with some conclusions. So we had a pure optimal stopping problem, which we solved by looking at properties of the value function. A lot of hard work, smooth fit. Maybe there's other ways to do it. The numerical results suggest that inside information will induce some things. And of course, there's many, many other things you could do. I could put in all the things that people asking about outside trading, risk aversion, different objectives, distort these probabilities. What about if I have uncertainty in the model, so uncertainty in the drift? or there's some time change, some point where the drift changes, all these things will be done. And I'll stop there so you can take the photo, all right?